My name is Ford Warwick, and I am 40 years old, and I was diagnosed with HIV in 1993, and let's see, at the time I was a student, and I was uninsured, and I basically went from clinical trial to clinical trial, getting on different medications, just whatever I qualified for, because I didn't have insurance. I wasn't eligible for, like, you know, Medicaid or Medicare or anything like that. And so I went along that way for several years. I, you know, had the various side effects that you have when you're on AZT or Epivir or these other medications that you, you know, the early HIV medications. And, you know, I went along fine for years and really didn't have a whole lot of health problems. I, you know, had a bout with shingles. I had some thrush at one time, things like that. My lab work, however, was bad. I went from infection to AIDS diagnosis within like 6 months. My CD4 went down to like 50. My viral load was, you know, sky high. And so for some reason, it just happened to hit my system really quickly.
Did you ever get an explanation for why that happened?
No. My doctor didn't really have an explanation. I knew exactly when I had been infected. And like I said, it's not like it, I had had it for a long time and not known. I knew when I was infected. And for some reason, it was one of these situations where shortly after I was infected, I got like severe flu symptoms, became very sick, and that cleared up. But then, like I say, my lab work just went bad really quickly. Initially, my, you know, CD4 was like 500, then it went down to 300, then 200, then, and it just kept dropping. And my viral load wasn't changing, it was just up there. Then, let's see, slowly it kind of stopped, my lab kind of stabilized, and it slowly started to climb. But like I said, even though my labs were really bad, I didn't have a lot of health problems, and it was kind of odd because the doctor is telling you you're in bad shape, but you don't feel like you're in bad shape. You know, you feel pretty normal. So, you know, that went on for quite some time. And then slowly, I got insurance when I got out of school. I started getting on a regular med regimen. My labs improved. But I never, for years when I was on regular labs, my viral load never went down to undetectable because I didn't go on a protease inhibitor. My doctor had recommended, and I agreed with him, that as long as my viral load stayed low, which at that time was like 3,000, that we weren't going to mess with it. We were going to stick with these medications. So we avoided going on the protease inhibitors, you know, for quite some time. Then, I guess it was about in...
The logic behind that was to spare them, right, in case you needed it at some point in the future.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In case the, as long as I was, my health was okay and my viral load was low, we wanted to hold off in case these things stopped working. Because we were worried that we were not sure how long these medications were going to be effective. So our idea was let's keep everything, you know, in our arsenal as we can until we need it. Eventually, like I said, about 2000, I started taking a protease inhibitor. I went on a regimen of Kaletra and Viriad and Epivir. And that's when I went to undetectable. But that's also when the lipoatrophy really kicked in, or I started noticing it. I noticed some lipoatrophy in my extremities, but it really didn't bother me that much because, I don't know, it didn't look that bad.
Yeah. What did you notice in particular? Was it in your arms and legs?
Yes, my arms and legs started getting veiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always worked out and, you know, have been pretty muscular, so the veins kind of looked like, you know, that I'd been working out a lot, and it didn't really bother me that much. But when the when it started affecting my face and I started getting comments on it, that's when it started upsetting me. I went through a period, I guess it was around 2002 or 2003, where I had some kind of GI problem and I lost 30 pounds. And that, combined with the lipo, made me look really bad. And I got a lot of people coming up to me saying, what's wrong with you? Are you sick? You need to gain weight. You know, all of these types of comments.
And I'm sorry, can you just recapitulate, because there was noise? I'm really sorry about that. Around the year, in between 2000 and 2003, just recapitulate what you were saying. You first began to notice it.
Right. I first began to notice the lipoatrophy in my arms and legs. Noticed that they were getting more veiny. That I was losing fat in my extremities, my legs, you know, in particular, things like that. But it didn't bother me that much because I have always been muscular, worked out, and it just looked like I was working out and was kind of ripped. And it didn't bother me that much. But when it started affecting my face, that's when I really started, you know, it started upsetting me. You know, I started noticing that my cheeks were going in, that my temples were going in. People were noticing. People were asking me questions about my weight. You know, if I had been sick, that I didn't look well, these type of comments.
Did you feel that people were aware of that look as kind of the AIDS look, or was it just general than that?
No, I live in Greensboro, North Carolina, and I don't think that people here, the general population is very savvy when it comes to HIV, and I don't think that they recognized it as that. I think that if I went to a major city, they would recognize that, but I don't think that people around where I live really recognized what it was. I don't think that most people here have ever heard of lipoatrophy, so I don't think that it was that. They just knew that something wasn't right.
And then you said that you got sick and lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, around 2002 or 2003, I had some kind of GI problem that they never could figure out, and I lost 30 pounds. That, combined with the lipo, I looked really bad. And I managed to gain the weight back, but for some, you know, the lipo never improved. So even though I was gaining weight, I was still getting comments about that I was too thin, that I look tired, that I, you know, is something wrong with you, these types of comments.
Okay. And over a period of time of having that experience of people sort of responding to you that way, what's the cumulative effect of it?
Well, the way it affected me was I felt self-conscious. There were certain people who I avoided seeing because they hadn't seen me in a while, and I didn't want them to see me looking bad, and I didn't want the questions associated with it, so I avoided certain people. And I think that I kind of, without knowing it, stopped looking people in the eye. I could tell, like at work, when I was working with patients and things like that, and a mental health counselor, there were certain people who I could tell they were studying my face, trying to like figure out what's wrong, or why do you look this way, you know? And, you know, I even had a couple of people comment on it, you know. It's like I had one person say, your face looks odd. You look like you should be on Star Trek, you know, and just, you know, comments. So, which, of course, didn't help my self-esteem. And I would look on the internet, researching lipoatrophy, trying to find, is there anything that's in the works in terms of a cure for this? Do they know why this is, what causes lipoatrophy? And there didn't seem to be a lot of progress, you know?
What did your doctor say?
My doctor, he basically said, there's nothing that I'm aware of that can help this. We can change your meds if you want to, but I don't know of anything specifically that's going to help with this problem.
Was he aware of which meds were causing it?
No, I actually, because I had researched it online, I think that I knew more about it than he did. And he had contacted specialists and things like that, but, you know, they didn't, several years ago, they really didn't know what meds were causing it exactly. They suspected that it was certain meds, but they didn't really know.
So, let me ask you, had you been on D4T?
No.
You'd been on... Xeret.
No, I'd never been on Xeret.
You were on Epivir, which is DDI.
Right.
And were you on AZT as well?
Yes.
Okay. In your understanding, what do you think caused it?
To be honest, I think that if part of it was just the HIV infection, and part of it was the medications that I was on. Because there was a period of time where I was not on any medication because I couldn't afford it, and I felt like I continued to have the peripheral lipoatrophy, but it was slow. To me, when it really kicked in was when I started taking Viread and Epivir and Kaletra, that combination. That's when it sped up. That's when I really started noticing it. But that's just my personal experience. I don't have any, you know, evidence to that. That's just the way it seemed to work for me.
So, you were basically on the internet researching.
Right.
Trying to figure out...
I would research, you know, every, say, 6 months or so, I would do a search trying to find out, is there anything new that's been discovered? Is there any new treatment, things like that. And I wasn't finding anything that was very positive. And a lot of doctors were saying that once you lose the fat, it's not going to come back. That even if we figure, you know, even if they figure out what is causing the lipoatrophy, if we stop that, once you've lost the fat, you've lost the fat. The chances of it coming back the way you used to look are very slim. So that was discouraging. And that's when I started looking towards cosmetic treatments for it. Because I felt like if this isn't going to be reversible, then I guess I should look at cosmetic treatments for it.
So over what period of time do you feel as if the lipoatrophy took place? Would you say it was like 6 weeks, 6 months, 3 years?
Oh, it was years.
Years.
I dealt with lipoatrophy for years. It's just for several years, I would say, you know, for 4 years, it was very slow. And then the past 4 years, it's sped up and become more noticeable.
Did you get the opportunity to talk to other people who were experiencing this, or...?
Well, when I started looking at cosmetic treatments, I decided to start contacting people about what they had done, the cosmetic treatments that they had done, such as Sculptra, Bioaclimid, PMMA, fat transfers, things like that. And, you know, because I would read different articles, I would see various physicians' websites, and frankly, I'm a skeptical person, and I didn't always trust what doctors were putting out there in terms of, like, their before and after photos and their results and things like that. And I felt like that the best information was from people who had actually had these procedures and didn't have a vested interest in selling a product. So I contacted various people over the internet asking for their experiences and if they could share photographs so that I could get a better idea of what I felt would work for me and any complications that people had had, or whether they were dissatisfied, would they do it again, those type of things. So that's when I
really... So you really undertook a lot of research.
Well, I did, because frankly, you know, I was afraid of having something injected into my face and what that would entail. So I wanted to know as much as I could about it before making a decision. To me, I felt like it was a serious decision and something that I needed to research before really having it done. So, you know, I wanted to learn as much as I could and figure out what the options are before making a decision.
Can I ask you if you were getting support from friends or family in dealing with this emotionally? It seems to me like it would really be the cause of some serious depression. And
I didn't want to discuss it with people, frankly. I didn't, you know, I wanted to avoid the topic. I didn't want people to bring it up. I hated every time someone would bring up my appearance. I just wish that people would, it's like I don't want to hear it, just leave it alone. So I didn't discuss it a lot with people. I discussed it with people online, but as far as friends and things like that, I really didn't want to discuss it that much. You know, and people, I feel like, you know, they want to make you feel better and say, oh, it's not that bad, and oh, you look fine, and you just look ripped, and things like that. But, you know, you look in the mirror, or you look at a photograph especially, and you just cringe because you're like, oh my goodness, that's what I look like, you know. So it's, I think it, for me anyway, I isolated more because of it. I didn't reach out to people. And when I started talking to people, it was more out of a desire to do research than to really, you know, to vent.
Yeah.
And there, you know, one reason why I posted my website was because, you know, a lot of people didn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of information out there. I had to kind of track people down and you know, ask them if they would share their experience with me. And, you know, there were many people who were perfectly willing to do that. It's just having to track them down, you know.
And there's no real centralized location for any of this information?
Not really. You know, there are certain sites which are helpful, but like I said, I really wanted to talk to individuals. That to me was the best information. I wanted people who didn't have a vested interest in any kind of treatment, who would just be able to say, this is what I tried, it didn't work, it did work, I'm happy with it, I'm not happy with it, these type of things.
So you got to the point where you had some understanding of the different options in terms of cosmetic or reconstructive procedures. Can you explain what those were and which ones you were weighing and how you came about making a decision?
Well, I had narrowed it down. In the U.S., there are not a lot of options. The only approved cosmetic treatment by the FDA is Sculptra, which was called Nufil before it was brought to the United States. And I went to a doctor in Chapel Hill, a plastic surgeon who did Sculptra, and for a consultation, he discussed with me, you know, about the process. Sculptra, Dermic, the company that manufactures Sculptra, has a patient assistance program where you can apply, and they will basically, depending on your income, give you the medication either free or at a reduced rate, and then you just have to pay doctor's fee. But for people who have severe lipoatrophy, like myself, it can take numerous treatments, and such as 5 to 6 for me was what they were estimating. And the doctor's fee for that is about $500 a treatment. And then the other thing is, Sculptra is not a permanent filler, and it will go away eventually. And the doctor I spoke to had said, you know, I have some people who have had multiple treatments with no results. And that was discouraging to me because I felt like I don't want to spend $2,000 and have nothing happen. So that was a little, I was a little discouraged about that aspect.
How can you have no results if there's an injection of a fluid into your cheeks?
What happens is, with Sculptra, it's injected into your skin, and then your body reacts to the particles in Sculptra. It's suspended in a fluid, and the particles cause collagen to be generated. And for some people, their body doesn't react to the particles as well as other people. It's dependent on your body reacting to the substance being injected. Because the Sculptra itself and the fluid eventually just gets absorbed into your system and goes away. And they're counting on that collagen to be generated to create the filler.
So, and there's no way of really predicting. Does it have to do with your immune health or anything like that? Or it's just an idiosyncratic thing?
According to the doctor who I spoke to, they can't really predict who it's going to work well for and who it's not. He said that he's had people who have done well after a couple of treatments. He's had people who have multiple treatments and had no reaction. He's had people who have had a couple of treatments, and then all of a sudden on the third treatment it works. He said so he didn't really know, have an idea of why with some people it works and some people it doesn't. Because I think just like any medication, it reacts differently with certain people. So then, that was Sculptra. The other options were leaving the country and going to Canada or Mexico or Brazil or Italy to have a permanent filler done, such as Bioacquamid or PMMA. And PMMA is, they're both permanent fillers, so you're not really as dependent on a reaction the way you are with Sculptra. And after talking with different people about their experiences with different physicians, I decided that PMMA was more of what I was interested in because, for one thing, it was more affordable. It was much less expensive than Bioacquamid. The other thing was,
how much are the comparable prices approximately?
I contacted Clinica Estetica in Tijuana, Mexico, who has done Bioacquamid for years, and they gave me a quote of $4,300 to do my face. I had contacted Dr. Sarah in Rio de Janeiro, who estimated it would be $600 to $700 to do my face.
With the PMMA.
One of the differences between PMMA and Bioacquamid is Bioacquamid apparently can be removed. PMMA cannot be removed. Once it's there, it's there. But PMMA has an advantage over Bioacquamid in that it's a smaller filler, and so it tends to give a more smooth appearance than Bioacquamid. And since I started researching this, Clinica Estetica in Tijuana has gone from using part Bioacquamid, part PMMA to all PMMA in most situations. So,
what is PMMA made of?
PMMA is made of a plastic that has been used for years and years in joint replacements, and it's also what contact lenses are made out of. So it's been used in the body for many years, and people don't have allergic reactions to it. So I felt good that it's a substance that's been used in the body for numerous years. And what they do is they have it in different concentrations depending on how much filling needs to be done. For example, I had PMMA done in my buttocks and my face. And in my buttocks, they used a higher concentration of PMMA than in my face, particularly like my temples, because the skin is so thin there, he used like a 10% solution, where in my buttocks, he used a 30% solution. So that's what PMMA is, basically. Bioacquamid is a polymer, as I understand it, that is, it's larger than PMMA, and therefore, for like doing temples and things like that, it's not quite as good because it sticks out too much. It's too voluminous.
So you went to Rio de Janeiro?
Yes, I went to Rio de Janeiro. I actually went twice. I went in January and had an initial treatment of my face and my buttocks. And when I went there for the first session, Dr. Sarah told me that it would probably be 2 sessions for my face and possibly 3 sessions for my buttocks.
Was that a surprise or not?
No, it wasn't. Because I had read that what Dr. Sarah does typically is, especially with your face, he kind of underfills it the first time, because when you have these injections, he's injecting this fluid. The fluid gets absorbed into your body, and then he does the initial one, and he kind of underfills. And then with the second one, the second treatment, it's more of a touch-up, where he can see where you need a little bit more. Because, like I say, you can't remove this filler. So he underfills initially, and then does a second treatment where he touches up.
And it sounds almost like... well, it clearly takes a great deal of artistry on his part.
Right. That's one reason why I went to him, is because he's done hundreds of treatments with people. And there's, you know, technique to this because, for example, he was telling me that through years of experience, he's learned kind of the pattern of injections that he has to do based on the lines of your face, because... so that your face looks natural even if you have continued lipoatrophy. Also, experience is necessary because if you don't do the injections to the proper depth in your skin, you can end up with granulomas, which are basically red lumps that can form on your skin where you've had an injection. So the one thing that I've told people online who have asked me about my treatment is, whichever doctor you go to, make sure that they have experience with lipoatrophy, that they have experience doing this type of treatment, because it's not just sticking a needle in your face and shooting something in. There's an artistry to it.
What's the actual process like? How long does it take? Is it painful? How many needles does it take? How many injections?
Well, in my buttocks, what he did was initially, we talked for quite some time about what my expectations were, what I wanted. He looked at my face, he looked at my buttocks, he took photographs, he explained what he was going to do. With my buttocks, he gave me localized injections for numbing, and then it took, he said, about 60 injections per cheek for my buttocks for my first treatment. I didn't hardly feel, I felt almost nothing when he did my buttocks because it was numbed and I just didn't feel it. I definitely noticed the results when it was done. It was a dramatic difference.
Really?
My butt had atrophied to the point where it was basically, you know, muscle. And I had lost so much cushioning that when I would sit for long periods of time, it would be uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
So when I had this done, it was like, you know, I had a cushion back. So it was definitely much more comfortable to sit down after the first treatment. My face was, he spread a numbing cream on my face. He said that he couldn't do numbing injections into my face because then your facial muscles relax and he can't see exactly the way your face is shaped. So he does a numbing cream, but I have to say the facial injections were painful. They were uncomfortable. And also he has to press down to spread the solution in your face, and that whole, just having, you know, so many injections in your face and having him press on your face, it was very uncomfortable.
How long did it take?
The entire process took about an hour and a half. Then that's including the consultation and having the injections done.
For face and your butt?
Right. So it really didn't take that long.
Wow.
And I went back the second time in March. the middle arch. He did a second full treatment on my butt and a touch-up treatment on my face. And then we were both, you know, felt satisfied that two treatments was enough for my butt because it just looked fine, and we were both happy with it. So I feel like that my treatment's complete at this time, in case, unless I want to have touch-ups done down the road.
How are you feeling now about the way you look?
I feel much better. I feel much more self-confident. I feel like that I look like a normal person. My goal was not to, you know, turn back the clock 10 years or something like that. I really just wanted to look like a normal person, because I didn't feel like I looked like a normal person before. And so now I feel more confident. I like my appearance. I like looking at myself in the mirror now where I didn't before.
And that's wonderful. And I am curious to know once you get used to it, is it as if it's just natural fat?
Yeah. I mean, I touch my face and I don't know that there's a filler in my face. My face feels completely normal. I haven't had any problems with lumps or hard areas or anything like that. My face and my butt just feel normal to me. Although initially it's a little bit of a shock because you get used to touching your face and there only being like muscle and bone. And then when you have, after the treatment and you have your face back, it's kind of a change because you touch your face and you have cheeks again, you know, and it feels like a normal face. So it's a change, but it's a good change.
Were you able to get your insurance to cover any of this?
No.
Did you look into that?
I contacted my insurance company, and they, you know, I contacted them specifically about Sculptra, because I know that they're not going to pay for something out of the country that's not FDA approved. I just wasn't even going to present that to them. But with Sculptra, they said, well, we've never heard of this. Get the doctor to describe it, and we will, you know, run it past a review company and things like that. And because I didn't decide on Sculptra, I didn't take it any further. My insurance company sounded like that they would consider it, but the physician who I went to in Chapel Hill said that he had not been able to get any insurance companies to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had heard that there's insurances, specifically with people who have insurance in California, who have been able to get their insurance to pay for Sculptra. But I think that those companies are few and far between. But I think people should at least give it a shot. All the insurance company can say is no.
Yeah, I spoke to someone who went through, who was absolutely determined to get his Sculptra treatment. He got the compassionate use or the patient assistance of the product itself, and so he was determined to get the surgery, or such as it is, paid for. And it took a lot. It took 6 months and many appeals, but he finally was able to do it. And he was able to do it, especially, he thinks, because he had a therapist, and the therapist documented in great detail the kind of psychological price that he was paying and the way his life had been affected.
Right.
By this.
Right. You're going to have to prove to the insurance company that you're not doing this solely out of a cosmetic reason, that there, you know, that there's an impact on your mental health, or there's an impact, for example, on, like with my butt, you know, that you have trouble sitting, that there's, you know, it causes you a physical problem, something like that, in order to get an insurance company to pay for it. So, I mean, I think, like you say, it can be done, and I would encourage anybody who's looking into Sculptra to try and get it paid for. But I didn't even bother with asking them to pay for a, you know, non-FDA approved procedure in Brazil. There's no way they're going to pay for that, so. I knew that I was going to have to pay for that out of pocket.
How much did it cost you altogether?
The entire cost for both of the treatments was about $2,200. And, of course, that doesn't include, you know, the cost of travel to Brazil. But the treatment itself for two of the treatments for the butt and the face was $2,200, which for me, I felt like was a bargain considering just to have my face done in Mexico was going to be $4,300. So
it also sounds to me like you have a lot of faith in this doctor.
I do. I heard nothing but good things about him, and then when I met with him, I felt very good about it because he's been working with people with lipoatrophy, with people with HIV for many years. And the more I talked with him, the more comfortable I felt because I was perfectly prepared when I went to see him that if I was uncomfortable, I was going to just say, forget it. If I had gone into that office, I don't care if I had flown to Rio. If I didn't feel comfortable with him, I would not have had the procedure done. But he has a lot of experience. He's very compassionate. I have nothing but good things to say about him. I didn't feel like that he was doing this to make a buck. I felt like he was doing this because he has had so many friends who have had problems with lipoatrophy, who have had problems with HIV, that he has, you know, he took it upon himself to get into this in order to help people. And I feel like he knows what he's doing.
Did you travel there by yourself?
No, I traveled there with my partner for the first treatment. And then the second treatment, I went on my own.
Ah, so you have a partner?
Yes. I've had a partner for almost 14 years.
Wow, what has the impact of all this been on your partner?
Well, I think that, I mean, honestly, he's going to love me no matter what I look like. And, you know, I think that, I mean, and he's had to deal with his own body change problems from it. He doesn't have as much lipoatrophy as he has the fat redistribution with buffalo hump and things like that. And he's thinking about options, you know, for him to, you know, correct that. But for me, he was very supportive. He knew that it was upsetting to me. He felt good about the research I had done. And so he was completely supportive of me getting this treatment. He just felt like, you know, if this is going to make you feel better, and you feel good about it, then great, let's do it. He was just, you know, behind it 100%. And I think it was more just because he knew it upset me and he didn't want me to feel so self-conscious anymore.
So in the end, did you switch off of the Epivir or AZT?
Yes, I switched my medications to Truvada, Reatez, and Norvir.
And when was that?
I switched, I guess it's been about 9 months ago. And I really switched to get off of the Viriad and the Epivir. I had side effects from the Kaletra, and also my cholesterol was through the roof being on that med combination. And so switching to this, I've not only gone down to only having to take meds once a day, I've eliminated the side effects that I was having from the Kaletra, and my cholesterol has gone down to normal.
It also sounds like you've always been exercising and healthy and...
Right.
Like, so that...
I've always been very active. I've always worked out. I've always jogged. I've been, you know, pretty health conscious. I try to keep up with what's going on in HIV so that I know, you know, how to manage my treatment. things like
that. It must be so frustrating to see your cholesterol go through the roof like that when you're doing everything right.
Right. I mean, it was, you know, it was just a side effect. It was a side effect probably of the Kaletra, and, you know, I was doing everything right. I mean, my lipids were through the roof. I mean, you know, they're supposed to be, I think, around under 400, and mine were like 1600 or something. So, and we had tried all of these different cholesterol medications, none of which put a dent in it. I really needed to switch off of those meds just to get my cholesterol level down.
Yeah.
And it worked. So I'm, knock on wood, I'm happy with this combination.
That's great.